The fundamental change is defining the three-tiered hierarchy for risk management, coming from a strategic level all the way down to the tactical, governance, mission, business process, and then down to the system level. That's really the fundamental change, to make sure that we integrate security and risk management from the strategic level, the top of the organization, all the way down to the lowest level systems.
How's this different than some of the other publications that we've seen over the years? Is it the fact that you're tiering it and you're saying focus on the risk management, or is it a whole kind of new approach in many ways?
I think the difference is that most of our publications, to include the 837 at this point, focuses on security at the systems level. We have a little bit of discussion with common controls going up to the enterprise, but this is the first time we've really had a serious discussion about what it means to have the three tiers. The governance layer, where you talk about culture and you talk about trust models and the risk management paradigm being implemented across the organization. And then, of course, Tier 2 being a really aggressive use of enterprise architecture and building security at that level. That's something that's fundamental to reducing our number of vulnerabilities on the back end. We have an endless number of those. We'll continue to battle those. But if we do a better job on the front end, we can actually have a hope of reducing some of those at the back end.
You mentioned the enterprise architecture, and I thought that was very interesting because obviously this has been something the agencies have been working on for quite some time, and we've heard very early, you know, back 2003, in fact, right, they started to work on enterprise architecture. But you're saying that it's not being used, or it's not being aggressively used like it should be. Talk a little bit more about that comment, because I found that actually very fascinating.
Well, the aggressive use of enterprise architecture would be taking and integrating the security and privacy requirements into the architecture process. We have a good FEA, the Federal Enterprise Architecture process. It needs to be pushed out more aggressively and, as part of that process, integrate some of the things that we're talking about in the NIST special publications into that process. And the under OMB's leadership, we've just recently upgraded the Federal Enterprise Architecture Security and Privacy Profile, which actually is a handbook on how to do security and privacy at that enterprise architecture level. So aggressive in the sense of making sure we get the right requirements early in the process instead of waiting until the system is already deployed, and then we have to kind of retrofit things. It never works as well. It's more costly, and we don't get as much effectiveness out of it.
And the security and privacy profile, you said you recently upgraded. Talk a little bit about what happened there. I know that's something probably done by the CIO Council, but I know NIST was involved.
Actually, it was under the leadership of Shimendra Paul from OMB, and Scott Bernard from Department of Transportation was my co-chair. I was looking at the security aspects. Scott is an enterprise architect, and we also had Toby Levin from DHS is looking at the privacy requirements. She's since retired, but the three of us had really unique skill sets, one security, privacy, and then the architect. Putting us in the same room and having us try to understand each other's language was the first challenge that we faced. And once we did that, we then sat down with our working group and tried to craft a document that would be understandable to both security folks and enterprise architects and the privacy community. So when you start to develop a new information system coming out of your enterprise architecture, these things will already be built into the process. In other words, you can't go forward and procure a new system unless those security and privacy requirements have already been defined and are part of the overall package that's going forward.
Is this just come out, or what's the timeline around that? Is it been out for a while?
It's being reviewed now. It was just released for internal review, and it's going to be coming out probably within a month or two after we get the comments back and then finalize it.
You also mentioned the agile defense, the theory behind that. Is that something NIST is starting to look at? Is that something that's being incorporated into 839, or is that kind of a up-and-coming approach to cybersecurity?
It's part of a project that we've been working on. Actually, the MITRE Corporation has been working on something called cyber prep, cyber preparation. And that cyber prep involves defining a threat taxonomy where you can define the capabilities, intentions, resources, and targeting aspects of a threat. And then equivalent to each one of those types of threats, levels of threat, you can develop an equivalent cyber capability, a security capability that would allow you to withstand those types of attacks from that type of adversary. And then that will be tied to security controls. And so this notion of agile defense supporting boundary protection will be described in 839, the publication coming out later this year. But it will also be supported by a new appendix to 800-53 talking about threats. We're going to try to do that later this year. That's ongoing work.
And then finally, you mentioned the continuous monitoring. There's been a lot of push both from OMB, the Hill. There's a new bill, obviously, from Lieberman Collins about continuous monitoring. You're kind of contention is that, in some ways, that we already are doing continuous monitoring in some ways. It can be done better. It can be done more efficiently. But it's not like it's not as static as many people think. Is that correct?
Well, I think that they're right. I don't think there's any black and white in this whole discussion of continuous monitoring. It's certainly a very, very important concept that we have to do as efficiently as we can, because clearly having the ability to monitor your controls on an ongoing basis to pick up the latest and greatest information, whatever the cyber attacks you might be experiencing, is clearly a good thing. Understanding the security state of our systems is critical. I think the big thing that we're moving to now is more automation and being able to automate and monitor certain controls on a more frequent basis, which gives us better, more timely information. But continuous monitoring has always been part of our risk management framework. It's step number 6. And it assumes that you've done good work on the front end to make sure you've selected the right controls and they're implemented properly. So it's not a replacement for anything. It's actually driving us forward to get better information in a more timely fashion.